That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or the desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, who were among those who would explore the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people in the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them."
Good morning. No, I'm not Dave. And how I ended up here, I'm not sure. We were in a men's meeting, and we're sitting around, and Dave says, "I'm going on vacation, and I need somebody to speak." That Sunday morning. And I sat there and I thought about it, and nobody was speaking up. And I'm like, well, you know, Jim speaks a lot. Why didn't Jim do it? No, he didn't speak up. So finally, at the end of the meeting, I was like, okay, I'll do it. I haven't done it in a while, and it's just me. So anyway, I know it's kind of thin today, and that's okay. It's kind of better for me. If it was packed, I'd be a little more nervous. And so what makes me nervous is I don't get nervous standing in front of people and making a fool of myself. That doesn't scare me a bit. I've been doing that my whole life. What does make me nervous, though, is putting forth the Word of God. Because if I do it wrong, I'm going to be judged on what I do. God tells us that in the Bible. My actions, what I'm preaching, what I'm teaching, I'm going to be judged on that. And if I do it wrong, that's bad. That's scary. So that, if you see nervous out of me, it's not because I'm in front of people. It's because of that. I always have that in the back of my mind. So I'm going to challenge everybody here this morning. If I say something that's not quite right, if I say something or I interpret something a little differently out of the Scriptures than you interpret it, come let me know. Come talk to me. If I use some, what do they call them, churchy words, if I use words that you don't understand, come ask me what I meant when I said that churchy word. Because not everybody understands what the churchy words are. And so, yes, I am a member of the leaders team. Until we have elders, this is kind of what we're stuck with. You're stuck with me and a bunch of other men who have a big heart. And what we want to do is we want to guide this congregation in a direction that's pleasing unto the Lord. And our meetings are open for everybody. If you ever have a concern of the direction the church is going, or you just want to sit in and see what's going on, let us know. It's an open meeting. Everybody's invited to the meetings. Okay, on to the content of this morning's lesson. Anybody in here ever gone on a family vacation? I know I have. And so, you know, Dad's rushing around and he's loading the car up and Mom's making sure we have enough food. And me and my sister, well, we're kind of bored because they're doing everything for us. So we're fidgeting and messing around with each other and poking each other. And finally, we're all piled into the car. We're in a car and we're going somewhere. And of course, wouldn't you know it, the poking begins. We're bored. And so the trips don't always end up being the greatest trip in the world. Sometimes the traveling portion of it's a little rough. And that's what we're going to look at today, is we're going to look at the traveling portion of the Israelites. Now, in this week's study, what we've looked at is we're going from the time that they were called to move to head to the Promised Land. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about probably an estimated 1 million people packing up everything they got. We're not talking about mom and dad and two kids in a minivan. We're talking about 1 million people. That's a lot of people. Now, if you go to some passages say 700,000 men. Okay, I'm not a biblical scholar, but even 700,000 people. The county of Ventura, not just a city, but the county of Ventura is just over 600,000. So you're talking about everybody in the county of Ventura, just men, at a minimum, and we're picking them up and we're moving them. We're moving from Los Angeles to Fresno. That's how far they're going. Anybody ever made that trip to Fresno? It's a little bit of a desert out there too. So they're making this trip. And that's what we're looking at, is we're looking at, they're making this trip. And they're on foot. They're on foot. All their possessions, they're dragging them along with them. So we pick up the story in Numbers 11. And so at the end of 11 and the beginning of chapter 12, we see the first 3 days are glorious. They're wonderful. All the tribes are gathered up and they're marching under the banner that represents that tribe. The cloud of God is with them. It's glorious. But then comes that third day. Me and my sister poking each other. They get tired. They start grumbling. And as they're grumbling, the Lord hears their grumbling. And so what's He do? In 12, we see He brings a fire to the outskirts of the camp. He brings fire to the outskirts of camp and it surrounds them. And then the children plead, "Oh, make the fire go away. We're so sorry. We didn't really mean it. We weren't really grumbling." And so the fire goes out. So back to this trip with me and my family, and we're in the car, station wagon, kind of far away. And me and my sister are poking each other, and we're just having a good old time. And, "Hey, there's that line there. You crossed the line. You touched me." Anybody ever have that happen? I did. Me and my sister did. I'm sure that nobody in here ever experienced that. Well, when my dad finally had enough of it, what did he do? He reached around and got the only thing he could get. Whack! Usually a leg. Usually mine. I don't know how my sister got away with it, but I guess she was smart. She knew, "Oh, here it's coming. Here it's coming. She's going to poke me that last time." I think that's what God was doing to the children of Israel, the nation of Israel. He was giving them a little whack on the leg, going, "Hey, look, pay attention. Pay attention, you're headed to the promise that I made to you. This is where you're going." So later on, as we get down to verse 4, we see there's more complaining. "Oh, all we ever have to eat is this manna. All we ever have to eat is this manna. We want some real food." God was giving them everything they ever needed. God was taking care of them. Their needs were met. But oh, we remember when we were back in Egypt. We had meat. We had fish. We had melons. We had cucumbers. We had garlic. Many things. But now, we have lost our taste. Ah, the good old days. The good old days back in Egypt. How can you imagine the good old days? Back in Egypt wasn't a good thing for these guys. When they were in Egypt, they were slaves. They were told what to do from the time they got up to the time they went to bed. Told what to do. They were worked to the bones. A lot of them died working. It wasn't a good deal. How could this be the good old days? I think that it may be because we knew what to expect over here. When we were back in Egypt, we knew what to expect. Yeah, we had some good food. Yeah, some times were hard, but it's the good old days. Just the good old days. So they got God's attention because they wailed loud. Wailed's one of those churchy words. Wailed is crying aloud and moaning and groaning and making everybody else's life around you miserable. That's what they were doing. They were wailing. And they wailed to God. Said, "Oh, if we only had meat." Now, I like this because God has a sense of humor. What does God do? God tells Moses to tell the people to get ready because he's going to bring them meat. And they're not going to eat it for just a day. They're not going to eat it for just a week. Or not just 20 days. They're going to eat it for a month. They're going to eat it until it comes out their nose. They're going to have more meat until they just loathe the meat. You know what loathe means, right? Can't stand it. Everybody's probably heard of something like this, but I heard a story of a young man that he was sneaking a cigarette out behind his house. And he was out there and he was just puffing away, and he didn't know it, but his dad had found out what he was doing. So instead of his dad coming out and punishing him, his dad came out and sat down next to him with a pack of cigarettes. And that boy just smacked it away, and he put it out, and he was kind of happy with himself. But dad pulls another one out of the pack and gives it to him. Makes him smoke it. Then he pulls another one out of the pack and makes him smoke it. You know what? After about four or five of those things, he was ill. He was green. He was sick. He was in a corner, and he was down for the rest of the day. Do you think he loathed cigarettes? Well, God had a wind come up, and it blew quail in. And it didn't just blow a couple of quail in. It blew in quail 3 feet deep. And as you stood there and looked in the middle, it was a mile, it was a day's walk in any direction. Now, if you were in class this morning, Dick did some calculations. That's what he does for a living. And he figured that on a good day, it'd be 10 miles. So 10 miles every direction. I don't know. I'm not a calculator. I do contracts for a living, so that's, we just put down what other people tell us. But so a day's walk in any direction, 3 feet deep of quail. That's a lot of quail. That's a lot of quail. And so the people gathered up as much as they wanted. And God was true to his word, because it says, even as the meat was in their mouth, that it caused a plague to come upon them. And many of them died. So finally, the children are on their way they're sitting at the edge of Canaan. They're the promised land. This is the land that God had promised. And God told Moses that he should send leaders from each of the tribes to go in and explore the land. These men went into the land for 40 days, and they explored the land. And one of the most vivid things that comes to my mind is when they talk about the grapes. When you read the story and you hear about they cut a cluster of grapes off, and it takes two men to carry it on poles on their shoulders, to carry a cluster of grapes. Man, that land is fertile. And at the end of 40 days, they come back, and we get this report that says, true, the land does flow with milk and honey. Here is the fruit. And in my mind, I picture that big cluster of grapes. And as they're saying, here is the fruit, but. Isn't there always a but? But there's giants in the land. There's always a but with every story. And as they were saying this, and the others that had gone into the land are saying, no, we can't do this. We can't do this. Caleb stops them right there on the spot. And Caleb says, we should go take this land. With God, anything is possible. We should take this land. Well, how many Calebs do we have here today? How many people are sitting there thinking that sometimes, in the back of your mind, that we are the only one in the group that says we should go do this God's work? Unfortunately, it happens. And sometimes we have that feeling that we're the only one. We need to be more like Caleb, though. He puts his foot down. And you can see where he tears his clothes. And he's there with Moses and Aaron, just pleading with the people that that's what they should do. And as we see in our story, what happens next is the people are complaining. If you go to Numbers 14 and 2, it says they raised their voices and wept aloud and grumbled against Moses and Aaron. It was so bad that they were thinking about stoning them. They were going to stone Moses and select a new leader to take them back to Egypt. You remember the good old days that we talked about in Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. So what makes the good old days the good old days? What makes them better? They were definitely not better for the Israelites. So I would suggest to you that what made them the good old days is because they knew what to expect. As I was saying earlier, they knew what was happening in Egypt. They understood it. Out here, we got to trust God. We got to trust somebody other than ourselves. They didn't like that. Either they didn't trust God's promise, or they had forgotten God's promise. One or the other, we're not sure which, may have been both, because many times you see where they walk away from God. They do what they should not be doing. So we have our good old days. When's our good old days? Was our good old days before we were a Christian? When we could do whatever we wanted to without our conscience bothering us? Is that the good old days for us? Maybe the good old days were when you had a partner that would go around and teach and preach the gospel with you. But now, unfortunately, that partner is no longer able to go with you. And so you're out there alone. And it's a hard row to hoe when you're out there alone trying to preach the gospel and get the word out there. Maybe that was the good old days back when you had a partner to help you with it. So back to our story. God was not pleased with the fact that the Israelites did not want to go into the land and do what they were asked to do. They had forgotten the promise, or they didn't believe the promise. They didn't think they could do it. Only Caleb and Joshua, they were allowed to enter the land. Only those that were 20 years old and younger were allowed to enter the land. Everybody that was older than 20, they died out in the desert during the wandering of the 40 years. So let's fast forward. We're going to skip 40 years. We're going to come right back. Same spot. The same place where they were at before. They're sitting there, and they're on the verge of entering the promised land. This is the promised land that God had promised Abraham 650 years earlier. We're right on the edge of the fulfillment. Now, Moses, who knows the people, he's watched the people turn away many times when things didn't go their way. It was going God's way, but it wasn't going their way. So they turned away. They turned away from God. And Moses knew this. Now, Moses, this is the same guy that was, Lord, pick somebody else. I am not a good speaker. I don't want to do this. This is the man who gives the speeches that are listed out for us in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is basically three speeches that were made. Now, I'm not going to go over all of Deuteronomy, but I'm going to have William come up and read a small section for us.
We'll be reading out of Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 11 through 20. Now, what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven so that you have to ask, who will ascend into heaven and get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask, who will cross the sea and get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? No, the word is very near to you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so that you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, keep his commands, decrees, and laws, and then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your hearts turn away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Now that's kind of an impressive speech. That's rousing to them. I would suggest that everybody here go through Deuteronomy. And you know, you can fast forward through those parts where it talks about the tribes, when they were getting the tribes together and who the leader was and what they were doing and all that. Just kind of zip through that, because that won't stick with you. But the speeches brought out in Deuteronomy are just wonderful, and they're very inspiring. So takeaways from this morning's lesson. All of our choices have consequences. Me and my sister sitting in the back of the station wagon poking at each other, it had consequences. It ended up one of us got slapped, usually me. Through our daily lives, it's the same way. The choices we make in our daily lives, there are consequences with them. We need to remember that what God wants us to do. We have this wonderful book laid out for us, and there's a plan in here for each of us. And we need to remember that. Now, we can either not believe it, or we can forget it, or we can remember what's laid out for us. We need to remember God's promises, and God keeps His promises. Just like Vern said this morning on the table, he gave many examples of God keeping His promises. He kept His promise to the Israelites. They did go into the land. They did inherit it. We can choose to have God as our driver as we go through this life. He can drive this minibus for us. Or we can try to do it ourselves. I don't think things are going to go very well if we do it ourselves. So the question is, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Right? You remember that? In the car, bouncing around. Are we there yet? No, unfortunately, we're not there yet. But if we're living for God, and we let God be the driver, we get to sit back, and we get to kind of enjoy this ride. Is the ride going to be bumpy at times? Absolutely. If the ride's not bumpy, you're not on a ride. Going to get a flat tire every once in a while? Yeah. But you know what? When things go bad, is usually when we hop out of the car, and we go try to do things our own way. Because God is just. God is righteous. God keeps His promises. And if we'll stay in the car, He'll get us there. Not necessarily smoothly, but He'll get us there. So with that, this morning, the lesson's yours. If there's anything we can do for you, if there's any prayers that you need, or just anything, we ask that you come forward now as we stand and sing.
Dead to the world, to voices that call me, living anew, obedient but free. Dead to the joys that once did enthrall me, yet is not I, Christ liveth in me. Sin hath no more its cruel dominion, walking in newness of life I am free. Glorious life of Christ my Redeemer, which He so richly shareth with me. Dead to the world, to voices that call me, living anew, obedient but free. Dead to the joys that once did enthrall me, yet 'tis not I, Christ liveth in me.
You may be seated.